It's Sunday morning. Time for the great outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. This is Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. I hope you enjoy my show this morning. It's going to be a little bit different than usual because it's, after all, the day before Christmas, and we're all gathering with family and friends and thinking of happy times. And so this is not a time for me to talk about a lot of issues that you may or may not agree with or get you into deep thought about something that we need to do in 2018. This is more about a time to talk about family and the outdoors and friends and how that really binds us together as a community for those of us who love the outdoors. And that's what I'm going to start off with this morning. And it really is a story of a family. In this case, I'm talking a little bit about mine, but I think I'm also talking about all of yours. And it's a story about a girl who, in this case, is my youngest daughter. And it may represent a granddaughter of yours. It may represent your daughter, but some way it attaches to all of us. I've spent much of my life in the outdoors, which is why I love doing the Great Outdoors Show on WGN Radio. And I've tried to introduce my kids to the outdoors, hunting, fishing, hiking, just being outdoors, skiing, whatever it might be. Doesn't have to be a blood sport like hunting or fishing. It can just be enjoying the outdoors. But in my case, I also really, really hoped that all of my kids would share my passion for hunting and for fishing and time in the outdoors. And my youngest daughter took a different path than my other two, who embraced it. My son can't wait to get up and go hunting with me, and my oldest daughter loves to go hunting. My youngest daughter, I call her my California girl from the point of view that she loves the beaches and loves warm weather and doesn't like getting up early and going hunting or doing those kind of things. And that's just fine. But an interesting thing happened that I think will resonate with all of you when it comes to how we carry on our outdoor traditions. It can't always come from your parent. And we read so much and we hear so much about how important it is for parents to take their kids into the outdoors and introduce them and get them engrossed in the things of hunting and fishing, and that's how we're going to carry on the traditions. Well, there's another P in that, and that P is peers. I think it's more about your peers than it is about your parents. And so as we think about this Christmas and holiday season, and we think about our families, and if we think about taking our kids, and the number of times I said to my friends or on the air, make sure to take your kids hunting or fishing, get them in the outdoors, or take your grandkids hunting and fishing, get them in the outdoors. I think I was giving great advice to myself, and that's what I've been taught was the right thing for us to do. But as it turns out, there's nothing that a parent can do for a child that will equal what peers can do for a child. So my 17-year-old daughter, who currently is recovering from breaking her back skiing, this fall said to me, "Dad, I really would like to go hunting. I nearly fell off my chair. I wanted to smile and stand up and say, it's about time, how wonderful." I knew that wasn't the right thing. And I said, "Of course, that would make my day. So Dad, I want to go hunting with my friends." And then I realized, I took a step back. And that's really what I'm talking about here this morning, is how friends and peer groups influence kids. So I said, "That would be great. What would you like to do?" She said, "I'd like to go duck hunting." And we're fortunate to have a place to go duck hunting and pheasant hunting, not too far away. And she said, "I'd like to go duck and pheasant hunting with my friends. And Dad, I'd like you to come, but I really want this just to be about my friends. So you can spend the night, but we really want to go hunting on our own, and we really just want to be together." And I'm thinking, you know, how big a party are they going to have? What's the real objective here? And then I realized, no, there is no real objective. The real objective was that my daughter and her friends wanted to go and experience this. Now, obviously, I couldn't just let them go on their own because gun safety is first and foremost what you want to do, particularly for people who really have never been exposed to guns. And my youngest daughter has been fortunate to shoot at trap and skeet ranges and break some clay targets, but had never, pulled the trigger on anything that was flying in the real world. So getting an apprentice license was easy. And the day came, Friday afternoon, they all left school and headed out to this place, and six of them arrived, and funny enough, they all brought their dads. One of them even brought their mother, and it turned into a family event. Cooking, barbecuing, playing pool, playing cards, late into the evening, and then, as happens with duck hunting, getting up early in the morning, and it was early in the season, so it wasn't cold, and these girls, who all now are seniors in high school, with their dads, put on their waders and got all their clothes on, and then we broke up into groups. Girls going with girls with a dad, guys going with guys with a dad, guys and girls going with the dad. But it was all about the kids. Dads didn't even bring their guns. We were there just to help our kids. And each of the fathers there, as we talked about this a few weeks later, said, that was the most impactful time in my daughter's life. The dads with sons didn't say it because their sons had hunted before. But the dads with daughters said, that was just the most, in introducing them to the outdoors and having them want to experience the things that we have tried to teach them since they were little kids, and to see that take hold, and to see them just on their own energy between them want to do this. It changed the way they look at things. And that was in October, and here we are right now before Christmas. And my daughter, who unfortunately had a skiing accident and is not going to be able to hunt for a while, said to me before the accident last week, Dad, right after Christmas, can I put together another group of friends? And can we go hunting again? This time I'd like to go pheasant hunting. So I think years ago that spark that I tried to ignite, and I kept trying to ignite it, and then with my other kids it took, and maybe in your families it's taken with one child and not another. We're all different. We recognize that. But it was the spark that we started that then took off when her friends wanted to go hunting. And so I think about all the national efforts about getting people in the outdoors. And it comes back to me that maybe we're partially right, but we're not entirely right. And if we focus on peer groups, that could be one of the keys, because young men and women and boys and girls do the things that their peers do. They don't go and play golf with their grandparents if none of their friends play golf. And yet we expect them to go hunting and fishing with their parents and grandparents when their friends don't hunt and fish. So as we think about the coming years, maybe we should think more about how do we get groups of kids on their own to think this is interesting. We can nudge them a little bit. We can make it easy for them. But ultimately, they have to embrace it. They have to find people who want to do it as well, who share their desires. And so as we look around at Christmas and we have our families together, I hope all of you who can and love the outdoors, try to instill in your kids what you love about the outdoors and your passions, whether it's hunting and fishing, which so many of us deeply love, or whether it's just hiking, canoeing, or boating, or just biking, or whatever it might be that takes us away from concrete walls and pavement as a family, that we do that. But we recognize that maybe the lasting connection that will be made is if a friend comes along, and that friend and our son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter, that friendship kindles the interest that we have tried to instill on them. I'll be back in just a moment with the Great Outdoors Show, and I want to talk when I come back about a little bit about what governments used to do, but now it's left to the private sector. And that doesn't say it's bad, but in the spirit of coming together as we do around the holidays, it indicates that we have some work to do when it comes to developing public-private partnerships if we're going to tackle so many of the conservation issues that we have ahead of us. Thank you for listening. I'll be back in just a moment with more on the Great Outdoors. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN, and first a message from your Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. And if you're just joining me, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays on this, the day before the most special day of the year for so many of us. And I'm going to switch from talking about what maybe could be one of the triggers for getting kids into back into hunting and fishing as their numbers plummet to a concept of public-private partnerships that is deeply lacking and which could be the key to solving so many of our conservation issues. And that is this. Very simply, a generation ago, well, actually two generations ago, the beginning of conservation was driven by private individuals who looked then to government to solve bigger problems. And the government created, at a federal level, it created, for instance, the entire survey system for surveying waterfowl populations. And it created ways to count geese and to count elk and deer, and it set seasons. And the pioneers in the wildlife community were professionals who dedicated their lives to discovery and then management. And here we are in 2017, and across America, no matter where you look, there is no single state that I can think of or have worked with that is in a leadership position. They're all followers. This generation of wildlife professionals who went into the profession because they wanted to change the world and to use science and to discover and then to put into management play is, I hate to say it, largely lost. Replaced now by a generation of individuals who may know nothing about the outdoors, but it was a great career. And maybe they studied butterflies or botany or something like that, and they end up running a state fish and wildlife agency, Department of Natural Resources. The backgrounds are different. The world is definitely different. But what's not different is the need to constantly seek better ways to gain information and to manage our natural resources in the most efficient way possible, both from a cost point of view and from a programmatic point of view. And in particular, I think of the Fish and Wildlife Service, which today is really inept. And I'm sure that I have individuals listening who work for the Fish and Wildlife Service who are going to come down on me like a ton of bricks. But the Fish and Wildlife Service at a national level is nothing like it was. It doesn't have the stature of individuals, it doesn't have the leadership, and it doesn't have the programs. So it falls to us to come up with the leadership and the programs. And one of those key things is technology. So here we are in 2017, and drones are going to be delivering packages, they're going to deliver medicine, drones are going to be everywhere. But they're nowhere in the world of wildlife research. It is left to private individuals and private organizations to do the groundbreaking work that enables drones to be tested and to be seen if they can be used to lower, not only lower the costs, but to dramatically improve the quality of our information. Imagine surveying waterfowl as is now being tested with drones. You don't have to fly an airplane. You don't have to have people walk on the ground with binoculars and count ducks as they do. The way we survey ducks and geese and swans and shorebirds has not changed since 1955. That was quite a while ago. Yet the private sector is now driving this change of technology. The Delta Waterfowl Foundation, the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation, other private individuals are funding studies into how can we determine if drones can be used through thermal imaging and through photography to actually count the number of cranes, ducks, geese, swans. Can it be used to count the number of wetlands? Think of Google Earth. Think of all these technologies. Fish and Wildlife Services is in the Neanderthal age. They're still flying airplanes and dragging chains between four-wheelers. They don't even have the funds, much less the inclination, to try to advance science. In the 1940s and 50s, it was the Fish and Wildlife Service that created the body of science that has driven now 60-plus years of wildlife management. Today, it's the private sector that's going to create that body of science because the government doesn't have the funding, it's too inefficient, and most of all, it lacks the leadership. And that's a sad statement to say about our National Fish and Wildlife Service and our states. Almost every state is the same way. And I know in Illinois, we've tried hard and we talk about professionalizing the DNR. We talk about getting all these things done. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, it's despite the best efforts of a lot of people, it's just talk. At the national level in Washington, there actually is no talk. No one is conceiving that I have seen of how to take today's technology and to drive down costs and to increase efficiency and to get better information. Instead, it's left to the generosity of private individuals who see a better way forward, who say, with my financial resources, I can make a difference. I'm not going to wait for the government. I don't look to the government for my solutions. But that's how the world has changed. So as I close the program, with Christmas dawning tomorrow morning, in the Christmas spirit and in the spirit of giving, I hope that we all can make 2018 a year in which we take the best of technology and our absolute drive to see things improved in the world of the outdoors. And we work together in public-private partnerships in a way that we have not, and that we come together to make 2018 a year for conservation that builds upon the success of technology, the ideology of the private sector, and our determination to have hunting, fishing, open space, and a clean environment in our future. Merry Christmas to all of you. Happy holidays. I'll be back next Sunday morning with more. Thank you for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.